Well, I actually find that this morning's meditation was so powerful and very humbling to me that I almost am not feeling like I'm feeling like I don't really know that I can follow it with any sense of having anything to add. But I will try. I will try. You will find me almost every weekday evening perched in front of my TV at 6 o'clock watching the PBS News Hour. It's a spiritual practice for me, as difficult as it sometimes is to even sit still through that hour. Sometimes I actually do get on the floor and stretch during the news because I have so much energy that is created by what I am listening to. It's a way for me to bear witness, bearing witness to what's happening in the country and in the world. In the face of so much that's coming at us all the time, feeling bombarded, I feel like I need that touchstone on a regular basis, where I feel like I'm like holding on to a thread that connects me to what's important that's happening in the world. And if I let go of that thread, I will just blow away. I sometimes feel like that. And yet I know one of my favorite affirmations in the Gray Hymnal are the words of Edward Everett Hale, who says, "I am only one." You know this one? "I am only one, but still I am one. I cannot do everything, but still I can do something. And because I cannot do everything, I will not refuse to do the something that I can do." Helps bring it back into perspective, right? There's so much. And that, yet it feels like even just by holding on to those threads that there's hope that I am doing something. If nothing else, I can pay attention. I can refuse to turn away from suffering and to try to understand the dynamics of oppression at play in the world, designed to maintain a world filled with suffering. Not the disease and death kind that we all go through, but the human-made suffering. Meg Wheatley writes, "We can feel so hopeless and overwhelmed by this world that we can turn away and just live the best that we can. Or we can learn to bear witness. We can't change the human experience, but we can turn toward and not away from those who are struggling." Meg Wheatley asks us this important question, and I invite each of us, for yourselves, for myself, ourselves, to think about it now. What am I willing to notice in this world? We can only pay attention to so much. How are we supposed to know where to turn our attention when we're constantly being bombarded with things that are calling for our attention? And Meg Wheatley continues, "I sense that more and more of us are shutting down. We have no other way of dealing with the haunting faces and frightening images that so frequently appear in the papers and on TV. We turn away, not because we don't care, but because we don't know what to pay attention to. We can't take it all in. And we try as best we can to get on with our own lives. The sense of overwhelm can leave us feeling numb, unable to focus, distracted. And I've come to believe that there are forces in our culture that like it that way. Forces in our culture that want to keep us distracted, disconnected from the underlying causes of this human-made suffering. as alarming as what's happening in Washington, and I don't usually talk about what's going on in Washington, D.C. from the pulpit, but I'm alarmed by what's happening, I think, to our democracy. I'm alarmed by what's happening in Washington. But there is a decided, I think, white noise factor in all of what's happening in politics in our country these days, aimed at diverting our gaze from the economic exploitation of entire countries and the planet for profit. I don't know how to say it any plainer than that, but the wheels of commerce often count on the ability to divert the public's attention away from the damage they cause as they roll over people. And that, my friends, is one reason I am especially grateful for the work of the Unitarian Universalist Service Committee. They can help us learn to pay attention to and deepen our understanding of exploitation, human exploitation, and support the people who are fighting for basic human rights for people all over the world. They can help us understand, for example, why so many people from Central American countries like Honduras are being forced to flee for their lives, making the perilous journey across Mexico only to be detained at our borders, and in many cases returned to life-threatening conditions, unbearable, unspeakable conditions in their home country. In May of 2018, a 13-member delegation of faith leaders, including UU Minister Kathleen McTighe and human rights advocates, journeyed to Honduras to observe alleged human rights abuses in the Central American nation. UUSC helped to compile a report of their findings. What they report is a cycle of displacement that has escalated since disputed elections in 2017. It begins with economic development. Western countries, including the United States and the Honduras government, back development projects designed to displace indigenous communities, making land no longer available to the inhabitants there. When those communities dispute what's happening, they turn to human rights defenders for support in defending their land. They are intimidated, they are threatened, they are abused in cases, and especially in the case of women, there's a lot of sexual violence perpetrated against women. And they feel defeated, and so they feel, and they are pushed out of their countries, and they flee. They flee from Honduras to the United States. And then, when they get to the border and they're deported back to Honduras, they have no place to go back to. And so they're forced to try to survive without any of the infrastructure that supported their community when they left in the first place. Time and time again, and this happens all over the world, you know that. Time and time again, entire communities of people are being displaced, dehumanized, and demonized by our government so an elite few can make a profit. Here's what Reverend McTighe had to say about her decision to be part of the delegation in 2018. "My desire to join the delegation is fueled by multiple interests. I'm driven by my commitment to human rights as well as my sense of moral compromise as a U.S. citizen, knowing that my own country has helped create the violence from which it refuses to shelter those who flee." It's a tangled web. "But I am also compelled by my faith, by the core values of Unitarian Universalism that remind me we are never really separate from one another." There's that seventh principle, the interconnected web of all existence. We are all connected inseparably from each other. We are never really separate. You and I and the people of Honduras are part of that interconnected web. We are bound in MLK's words in a single garment of destiny. Our humanity is bound to theirs. When their human rights are denied, all are diminished. We are diminished. And I've learned a lot just from preparing for today. Just by the resources that the service committee makes available, I've learned a lot about conditions in Honduras and the cycle of poverty. And so I really appreciate this little booklet right here. These stories of hope that the USC has been publishing for the Guests at Your Table program every year tells the stories of real people who are doing the work right there on the ground. Learning about the lives of people in places like Honduras who are mitigating harm, doing the best they can with what they have, feels to me like being able to follow one of those strands in the web that strengthens my connection to those people and their life-saving work. This year, these stories of hope feature the stories of four strong women leaders representing the strong women who lead one half of the partner organizations of the service committee are led by women. I wasn't really surprised to hear that, but I'm glad it's being lifted up. Women are often the ones on the ground working shoulder to shoulder to create the capacity for health and well-being in impoverished communities. There's a phenomenon that's been dubbed the girl effect. Have you heard of the girl effect? That points to the effect strong women leaders in a community can have on breaking down cycles of poverty. In their book, Half the Sky, Nicholas Kristof and Sharon Wudan describe the girl effect in this way. The basic formula is to ease repression, first and foremost, educate girls as well as boys, give the girls the freedom to move to the cities and take factory jobs and then benefit from the demographic dividend that of delayed marriage and reduced childbearing. The women, meanwhile, finance the education of younger relatives and save enough of their pay to boost national savings rates. Evidence is mounting that helping women can be a successful poverty-fighting strategy anywhere in the world. And it's often women helping women that create this intergenerational effect. It begins with breaking down cultural norms that legitimate the abuse of girls and women, easing repression and empowering women with a sense of equity and justice. Women like Marta Velasquez, who is the second person down on your booklet. She became a feminist organizer in her community in Honduras when she was 20 years old. She's been doing this a long time. Marta is known as a defensora, a human rights defender. Her story is one of the four featured in the booklet. She leads an all-volunteer organization that's part of Foro de Mujer por la Vida, Forum for Women for Life. The service committee supports Foro's work to ease repression and abuse of women in Honduras, where violence and femicide, the murder of women because they are women, has become part of this cycle of intimidation and exploitation. I'm inspired by Marta's ability to face the daily suffering of women who have been abused. I'm inspired by her courage to do so in the face of the very real and present danger of retaliation by the perpetrators of violence, the military, and the government, in spite of which, she says, we will continue to fight for dignity and justice. Knowing a little bit more about Marta's story gives me the courage to learn more, to face the suffering these women are experiencing, to bear witness, to learn more about why it's happening, and to do what I can to support the work of the people who are there trying to break the cycles of violence, repression, and exploitation. Inviting a guest to your table, I think in our congregations has often been thought of as something the kids were going to do. But this stuff isn't really kid-friendly. this stuff's pretty intense. It's pretty heavy duty. And to really get to the heart of the matter, it's something that we all really need to engage in. I think it's great to have a box on your table and help your children learn that it can be a spiritual practice of generosity, of hospitality, of welcome, of gratitude, and to teach them that there are people in the world who don't have the human basic human rights that we all have, that we should all be very, very grateful for. But these stories are not G-rated. They are devastating, heartbreaking, and hard to believe that human beings can do these types of things to one another kind of stories. But the hope in all of this, I think, is in learning more about the real lives of the people who are doing this work, and that we can connect with people around the world and support them in this work in ways that strengthen all of us, that really do strengthen the ties that bind us as a human family. And so I hope we'll all take the opportunity to bring the box home, invite a guest to our table this year, and learn a little bit more. Make a little commitment to yourself to read through the booklet and just try to learn a little bit more and understand a little bit more about what's going on in the world and how we can connect to that through the work of the service committee. That's a lot. That's enough. May it be so.